Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot is daf pei. Whew, believe we get all the way up there so fast. And we're holding on Ayin Tet Amud Beit right at the bottom, the last line. So remember, we're in the middle of a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Batira in the Mishnah about what is the definitive difference between the types of sarisim in terms of the dinim of Yibum v'chalit. So according to Rabbi Akiva, what we were looking for was the Sha'at HaKosher. So unless we had a saris who was sterile from birth, totally congenital, as we're going to explain in a moment, then we wouldn't be able to be certain that he's not chayef in Yibum v'chalitz, because he had a shat kosher. And according to the opposite approach, entirely the opposite approach, is according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Batira, who says that's not the point. The point is whether there is a chance at his actually finding a cure. And therefore, it's the opposite. So that in the event that he was actually a congenital saris, then it is possible to find a cure. But the fact that you have someone who had a shat kosher, that does not define his kashrus or his able to be mechayev, his wife in Yibum, since at that point that he died, he wasn't ready to have children. Or at that point, he wasn't able to be making la'achiv shem. Those were the two very different approaches. Now, of course, for the context of this Gemara, the words Sriz Chama and Sriz Adam are not being used the way they always were, because over here we're talking about congenital. And a Sriz Chama certainly does not have to be congenital, because it just means that it would be Minah Shamayim. So if it was caused, let's say, remember, even one of the pshatim of the meaning of Chama is a fever. So he had a fever. So he had mumps, and mumps made him sterile, and whatever. I mean, so therefore the Gemara asks now, how do we define, meaning how do we define, in the context of our sugya, how do we define the meaning of Sriz Chama? Hechidami Sriz Chama, the way that you've been using it here. Omer of Yitzchak bar Yosef, Omer of Yochanan, here it means, Shelo ra'a sha'a achat b'kashruto. Remember that there was one of the explanations of Chama is that the sun never shined on him in any other state. In other words, from the moment that he perceived the sun, that is to say from birth, so then it would have meant congenital, because that would be most of the cases. So, mino yadina, how in the world can you know that an infant at birth is a saris? I mean, how do you know if he was 1 year old and you found out he's a saris? How do you know that that didn't happen later? How do you know that there wasn't the shata kosher, according to Rabbi Akiva? Can we actually define a state of sirisut that would be visible in an infant? So it would be in a case, the only way we could tell in an infant is if when the infant urinates, there's more of a dribble rather than a kippah. So there's no urinate. Kippah would mean that forms a arc. There's no arc when he urinates. And therefore, we know that he must have some kind of problem. That type of problem that shows up in urination is going to be a sign that ultimately he's also sterile. So, mimayhave, so what causes that kind of congenital problem? So we're assuming that it's not a hormonal problem. We assume that it's actually a problem that is part of fetal development because of environment. And the environment issue is actually his mother's fault. So it could be that his mother drinks a lot of alcohol, and that caused all kinds of problems in fetal development. Or it could be that his mother bakes cakes in the middle of the afternoon, and that would also be a disaster. That sounds funny, but it's not funny, because as we know, the testes are the most seriously affected by heat. And therefore, that's why there are testicles in the first place that are hanging out of the body, only because we have a heat problem. So Evolution never found a direct solution to the sensitivity of sperm formation to heat other than to cool down, which is weird. I mean, it's not a very good solution. It leaves you vulnerable to other things, to attack and so on. So nonetheless, we find this throughout, obviously, the mammal kingdom. All mammals have hanging testicles, which is like a terrible solution. But anyway, this is so much a sensitivity that the difference of just a degree or two in temperature is the difference between fertility and infertility. So it's amazing how sensitive this is. There are people who, if they wear tight underwear, they become infertile. I had a chavrusa that used to have to go around with an air conditioning unit around his testicles, and he wasn't able to have children until the doctor told him that's what he has to do. So they have these special units, and then he had children. Not powered units, but water evaporation coolant. The difference of that 1 degree or 2 degrees is the difference of fertility. So if the mother, it sounds crazy, but here's the mother standing next to a hot oven, and she's baking in the middle of the afternoon, says the Gemara, in the middle of the summer. So then that means her body temperature went up by a couple of degrees. So the child's testes never developed. That's apparently what it means. It really sounds weird, and it makes so much sense. So his mother was baking in the afternoon, afye ima betira, or shatya shikra marka. She drinks strong drink. A lot of alcohol is detrimental to fetal development. Unbelievable. Rav Yosef, wow. Hainu de shamana. This is what I always heard, that the limud was constantly, he was saying, Ami, my friend, it was Ravami, I heard him saying, that it means over here in the sugya, someone who was affected in utero. And I had no idea what he's talking about. How could you be affected in utero from things outside? Now I understand what he's saying. There are things that have to do with the mother's nutrition or even with the temperature in the womb that can make a difference. The guy's a genius. Anyway, asks the Gemara, but wait a second. I mean, the fact that you're saying you're going to actually be matir without chalitza, this is what Rabbi Akiva is saying, you're going to be matir without chalitza in the case of a child who never had a shasa kosher. And how do we know he never had a shasa kosher? The fact that we could see his urination is strange, and he's not having urinating competitions with his friends, right? So in other words, there's no, okay, who can get it further? No, because he dribbles. This is enough to be matir a woman without chalitza, despite the fact that we have no idea whether at some point between birth and the time at which he's supposed to be doing chalitza, or the time that he's dying over here, leaving a wife for chalitza, in either situation, maybe in between. There was a period. I mean, remember, Rabbi Akiva says, any shat kosher. Okay, so maybe there was a brief period in which he was fertile in between. How can we rely on the fact that we know at the beginning, at birth, there was a problem, and we know that when he's 39 years old over here, when he dies, that there was a problem? I don't understand. Why don't we have to be afraid that he actually, in the middle, he was okay, and therefore, if she is having chalitz, can't be matter without chalitz from a suffix? Says Zigmund, because if you know that at the beginning there was a problem upon birth, and you know that at the end there's a problem, currently, before he died, or currently, if he's the one that's supposed to be doing the yibum. So therefore, we can rely on that we've established the beginning and the end. Masiv Rav Mori, how can you say that establishing the beginning and the end is sufficient? So remember that there's a lot of dinim of mumin of a bechor. We have to be koveya, that a mum is a mum kavua before a kohen is allowed to shecht a bechor bal mum outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So we need to know that there's a mum kavua. Now, one of the mumim is a disease of the eyes in which you have either too much constant dripping from the eyes, you have white spots in the eyes. But if these are kavua, then they're considered to be a kavua situation. Now, the dinner over there is that they're supposed to be 80 days. How do we know what we were actually sitting there the entire 80 days and made sure that the eyes were sick the whole time, that this wasn't a recurring condition? I mean, how can you know it's a recurring condition? So it says over there that Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, this is a Mishnah, that Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus says in the Mishnah Becheres, the only way to establish that there wasn't any interim period in which the disease was cured is by bodkin eto shalosh pa'amim betoch shmonim yom. So you need to have once in the beginning, and then once at the end, and once in the middle. So that way you could be koveya, but you cannot rely just on the beginning and the end alone. That's not going to be sufficient. Because how do you know that the condition didn't disappear in between and then he once again got sick? Says the Gemara, you're right. If you're looking only at eyes, then you have to check three times. But if you're looking at a systemic problem, and infertility is a systemic problem, then it's enough to be once at the beginning and once at the end, and you have no reason to be chayshish. I mean, it's too strange that we should have a change in the middle and then suddenly became ill again in something that was affected the entire body. No. Therefore, l'kulei gufa lo chashinan, l'chadei ver chashinan. So for one problem, yes, that's true what Rabbi Chanina said over there, but not that we would have to look at an entire body. Rabbi Eliezer Amar lo, Rabbi Eliezer says, no, on the contrary, a sriz chama does do chalitz. And if a sriz chama dies, you have to be chaylitz li ishto. Why? Because he is curable. And therefore, it's not really a p'tur, because it's l'hakim l'hakiv shem. Under correct circumstances, he would have been able to. And to say, lafuke sarish shmo machui, it's not shmo machui, because he could theoretically have children himself. Now, something is weird, because it appears that Rabbi Eliezer, it contradicts himself from the Mishnah in Nida. The Mishnah in Nida says that he said just the opposite. He said that if someone is 20 years old, and he never, ever became, or never reached puberty, because he never had pubic hairs. So then, the Beis Din is trying to get his wife to get Yibum or Chalitza. The family does not want her to get Yibum or Chalitza. So what they want is that the court should announce that this guy was not roy to have children, and therefore, there's no din prat l'saris shmo machui. There's no din of her needing to get chalitza. So what should they do? Yavil raya. So the family should bring medical records to the Beis Din, and to show, first of all, they have to bring his birth certificate. So he needs to be 20 years old before we can determine that. Plus, he needs to be actually a saris, that is to say, vahu saris, that we can tell from physical signs that he's a saris, and we'll talk about what that is later. And then they will let her go without chalitza, without yibum, and then everything is fine. So, but he does have to first be 20 years old, plus he needs to actually have positive indications that he's a saris. Now, this is actually the halacha. Halacha goes like this. If someone never reaches puberty, in terms of signs of puberty, and then he remains a katan, right? And so here he is. I mean, he's 18 years old, but he's still a katan. Can't sign contracts, and so on and so forth. Not chayav in mitzvahs, doesn't get any onashim, contracts are not considered to be, so on and so forth, correct? Now, the question is, when he gets to be 20, he still hasn't brought signs of puberty. Is he still a katan? So if he also has positive signs of being infertile, then we understand that the reason that he never reached puberty was because of the fact that he hormonally doesn't reach puberty. But it's no indication for other issues of development. So at that point, he becomes a gadol. If, however, he cannot show any indications of infertility, so he doesn't show that he's a saris, right? He's not a eunuch. So therefore, only when he reaches 35 does he become a gadol, because that's considered to be rov shnatav. Then we could paskin that he's a gadol. Same thing is true in the opposite case. Suppose we have a guy dies and he leaves a wife who is 20 years old and she never reached puberty. So then they need to bring proof that she is 20 years old and that she does have actual signs, medical signs, of her being an islandess. And then she can go out, no chalitza, no yibum, everything is fine. So says Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says, not exactly. Both male and female are defined as a saris or islandess, as the case may be, at 18, not at 20. But I agree with the other things that you said. Rebbe Eliezer says, now here's where we have our problem. Rebbe Eliezer says that when it comes to the male, so then I agree with Beit Hillel, that he becomes a saris at 20. And when it comes to a female, since females mature more rapidly than males, so over there, it's 18. And there I agree with Beit Shammai, because a isha is mimaheret lavo lifnei ha'ish. Women generally reach puberty before men do, and so because of that, it's a faster chance for us to define that she's an islandess. But over here we find, he's saying, I agree with Beit Hillel. But that's the opposite of our Mishnah. Over here, he's agreeing that a Sris Chama does not do Yibum or Chalitza. So that's the opposite of what he says over here. In our Mishnah, he said, well, it's curable. And since it's curable, therefore, we should actually be Mechayev. Omar Rami Bardikule, Omar Shmuel, actually, Rebbe Eliezer changed his mind. And he discovered that he was wrong. Well, which one did he? I don't know which one was first, which one was second. I mean, saying he changed his mind. Does he now agrees with Rabbi Akiva, or just the opposite? He changed his mind about the story in Nida. So, Iboile, Mihai Hadarbe, which one did he change his mind about? Was the first psak that he made, was that our Mishnah? Meaning a Sris Chama is curable and he does do Chalitza? And then he changed his mind and he came up with the psak that he did in Nida that he agrees with Beit Hillel. Or did he actually first say that a Sris Chama, that it does not do Yibum or Chalitza, and then he changed his mind and says, no, as I say over here in Yevomas, I realize that he or she is curable at that age, and therefore he changed his mind. Says the Gemara, I'll bring you a raya. Take a look at the Braita. Braita says, Reb Eliezer Omer, Sris Chama Choletz, there we go, Choletz V'Choltzin Le'ishto. There he confirms his psak here in our Mishnah, Shekein B'minan Mitrapim B'Alexandria Shul Mitzrayim. The reason is, because as we know, the advanced medical facilities that were at that time the most advanced were in Alexandria, and that was at the height of the Alexandria development with the Alexandria Library and Hospital and everything, which has gone down in history. So they actually are capable there of treatment of diseases, including Srisut. And therefore, a soris that is curable only if he's a Sris Chama and hasn't been as a result of an accident and so on, then they could cure him. So you see that Rebbe Eliezer clearly, one way of learning this is because we've got two sources for Rebbe Eliezer, and it's more reasonable that that's the one that he's stuck with. But the more reasonable approach, as Rashi brings us his other approach, is that since in this case Rebbe Eliezer speaks about the actuality of the hospital in Alexandria, whereas in our Mishnah he only spoke theoretically that Yesh Lehem, there is a refuah. And over here he tells you which hospital to go to get a refuah. So it's mashma that initially it was just conceptually he held that there's a refuah, but then when he discovered that there actually is a refuah, right? So that must be the real one. But that's his latest psak. As always, we take something that has evidence as being the reason for the latest psak. So because of that, he obviously believes our Mishnah's approach, that there is a refuah, and he must have changed his mind from when he said in Nida that I agree with Beit Hillel. Rabbi Elazar says, what are you talking about? Where did he ever say that he was talking about Yibum and Chalitza? All he was saying is that I agree in part with the story of development of maturity, of sexual maturity. In one sense, I agree with Beit Hillel. In one sense, I agree with Beit Shammai. That's all he was saying. He wasn't saying anything about applying it to Yibum and Chalitza, was he? I mean, he didn't talk about whether we needed to have evidence of congenital cerebral or anything like that. So what makes you think he was talking about that? Lord Hagabe, he never changed his mind. There never was a contradiction. All he was saying is, if someone is 20 years old as a male or 18 years old as a female and has simonim of Srisutra Ilonit, as the case may be, and that is enough to define that individual male or female as a godol, so at that point it would be chayev in onashim. I wasn't talking about Yibum Chalitza. I told you in Yevamos what I think about Yibum Chalitza. That has to do with a totally different issue. That has to do with whether or not there is a cure. That's all. Itma. So we actually have a machlokas amoroim. Let's say in a case where somebody ate chalev at the age of 12 years old. Obviously, this is referring to a girl. And the point is that we're talking about an organism here. So we use the word he, even though the particular organism we're talking about is a she. That's not the point. So if we're talking about the age of 12 or we're talking about the age of 18, so then we're talking about the girl. So, so now the question is, this individual ate chalev. Was he or she a gadol at the time that they ate the chalev? And would they need to bring a carbon? Because they accidentally ate chalev. And then what happened was that after that age, noldubo simanei saris, there were these positive signs, again, which we're going to define. We haven't defined them yet, but there were these positive signs. And then afterwards, even if afterwards he does reach puberty in the sense of presenting pubic hairs and so on, Rav says it doesn't matter. Once he already had signs of cirrhosis, and he, in this case, she, was 18, even if subsequently she does produce pubic hairs, those are not pubic hairs. Those are just hairs. In other words, pubic hairs are defined as part of the process of reaching puberty. That process is over for this individual. And therefore, we now know that the reason that we did not see signs of puberty was because there is no process of normal sexual maturation. That would mean that this person was actually only defined as a, in this case, a female, a gedola. She was only defined as a gedola by the years. So when she was 12 years old, normally we would say, but wait a minute, she's not yet reached puberty, so she's not a gedola. In this case, there is no such thing as not reaching puberty. And therefore, says Rav, the moment that she reached 12, she was already a gedola, except we didn't know it. But now that we've discovered that there was no element of sarot at all, because she is really never going to produce sarot, whatever sarot, even if she has hairs, those are not pubic hairs. She's never going to have pubic hairs, defined as signs of reaching sexual maturity. So therefore, she became a gedola retroactively. In other words, we now know that she always was a gedola. That's the point. This is how Rav understands it. So, Nasa saris lemafreya, in this case, we mean from the age of 12, obviously we're talking about a female. Vishmul Amar, where Shmuel says, no, there's no such thing as retroactively. There is a delayed godless. So there's a delayed maturation process, which takes place not through the hormonal changes that are expressed in sexual signs, but rather it's a process that affects the overall body and brain reaching maturity. So fine, at the time, even though it says he, at the time that she was 12, she was still a kitana, and therefore she does not bring a carbon. And he, if he was 13, was still a katan. Okay, so now we have a machlokas Rav and Shmuel about whether this is a din that removes the halacha of shtei sarot and just gives us an alternative, or whether it actually is an indication that we can rely on the years alone to determine maturity. Matki Flor of Yosef, I have a real problem here. Because according to Rav, this girl became a gedola at what age? At the age of 12. But if she became a gedola at the age of 12, then that means that she went through a period of na'arut between 12 and 12 and a half, which is the way that the Torah defines na'arut. And therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, who says that Rogoff's enjoying the Sesame Street program this morning is lots of fun, but we'd love to have them back in the Beis HaMedrash.
I promise you don't want to know what's
going on. I'll let them ask. Okay. So, therefore, according to Rav, it's a very interesting situation, because Rabbi Meir says that the din of knas, remember the din of knas is if there's a rape or a seduction, so then there's a halacha of knas, chamishim shekel, which is paid to the father. This, according to Rabbi Meir, is only between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half. It needs to be a nara. Okay, so a ketana, there's no din of knas. Rabbanan say anytime up till the age of 12 and a half. So Ketana also has Knas. Now, what we always assumed was that according to Rabbi Meir, that says this in the Mishnah, that in the case where there was a Aglonit, then there would never be a Knas. Why? Because she was never a Nara. So we took that to mean she was never a Nara because she didn't become a Gdola till she was already 20 years old or 18 years old, right? And therefore, when was she a Nara? But now, according to the way Rav understands it, retroactively, she was a Ketana, and therefore, and became a Gedola at the age of 12, and therefore, she was a Nara until she was 12 and a half, right? So then, Eilanit, Rabbi Meir, should have a Knas. So why did Rabbi Meir say that there's no din of Knas by an Eilanit at all? Omar Le Abaye, you don't understand. The case of the Eilanit is that she never was a teenager. That's the point. She misses out on that period. So she became directly from being a Ketana to being a Gedola, that is to say a Bogeret. But she never went through that period that we call teenagery, which is between 12 and 12 and a half. That is a unique situation of being a Nara. And over there, you don't have it by an island. It's because that is actually defined by the process of puberty that begins with the appearance of Shtei Sarot and continues on for the half a year between 12 and 12 and a half. If there is no such period, then there's no such thing as being a Nara just because she was in the years between 12 and 12 and a half. Who cares? It's not the years that define this distinction. Perfect. Mikat nuta yatzta labega. She goes directly from a stage of ketana into a stage of bagrut. Oh, Rav Yosef says, that's ingenious. Wow, I wish they would quote me with such good things. Koki, hani milim al yata yatamru mishmai. They are just quote me on this, you know. That's really ingenious. Because now I understand. Of course, you're right. Because we have the same idea, the Tanya, Ein ha-saris nidon keven sorer umore. A saris male can never be a ben sorer umore. Because the din of a ben sorer umore only applies between the time of the appearance of pubic hairs till the time that the entire pubic area is covered with an adult-like pubes that is covered with hair. And therefore, he has to be a gadol, because otherwise he wouldn't be chayev in onashim, but he has to be a katan, because, in a sense, because he's called a ben sorer umore. So therefore, he is a teenager, so to speak, right? And that's defined here also in terms of pubic signs. Lefi she'ein ben sorer umore nidon ela b'chatimat zakan hatachton ve'ein aylonit nidonit kinara ha'meurasa. And here's the Lashon HaBraita, said Rav Yosef, Shemikat Nutayat Stalaveger. An Eilanit never has the din of an Ana'ara. In this case, he was talking about an Aramu Rasa, because he wasn't talking about Rabbi Meir's case, but the point is that she goes directly from Katnut into Beger. Okay, now we talked about having these signs and not just the age problem and the passivity of not presenting signs of puberty. There are positive signs of Srisut and positive signs of Eiloniyut. Now, what would that be? So, Omar Rebbe Abo. So, first of all, let me just tell you something. And that is, we'll get into what the specific signs are in one moment, but you need to know that you cannot rely on these signs until the age of 20. Then you can rely on them. So the simonim of Soris and the simonim of Ilonis. Now, the next statement of simonim of Ben Shmona, that has to do with whether a child that is born at the end of 8 months from conception is considered to be a viable child or not. Now, obviously, this was dependent on medical technology at the time. And as Reb Shlomo Zalman points out, it's absurd to try to translate this Gemara into having some kind of contemporary implication because the technology has completely changed. So it's nonsensical. But in any event, at the time, a Ben Shmona did not survive. But a Ben Shmona could always really be a Ben Sheva. Remember that we had two different gestations, and a Ben Sheva that was delayed, that's fine, obviously, right? If he makes it, even though he's delayed, and delayed births are actually dangerous, as we know, because the placenta stops functioning after a while, and you often have a stillbirth and so on. But nonetheless, it's possible. So we have a delayed birth, so then that's, of course, a fully formed child. But you can look at the child and you can know whether this is a complete gestation or an incomplete gestation. So that type of thing you can only rely on. Now, this is how Rashi understands it. You can only rely on once he's already reached 20 years of age. Now, all the other Rishonim said, this is insane. What is that supposed to mean? You've got this football player, you know, and there he is in the NFL. And he's like, you know, the top guy and so on, but he might be a NFL. what is that supposed to mean? How could he be a NFL? Okay, but maybe, I don't know, maybe he'll drop dead from a heart attack or something before he reaches the age of 20. I don't know, but once he reaches the age, that's how Rashi's learning. So he has to reach the age of 20. Everybody else says that the last part is not referring to the Ben Shmona. It's referring only to the first ones that it mentioned over here. Okay, now the question that we had, by the way, does a Ben Shmona actually survive? I thought we said that a Ben Shmona, Hareyu Ke'evan Ve'asur L'Taltalo, but his mother, you can't pick him up because he's basically dead. Again, this doesn't apply today. But his mother can bend over and without picking him up, can nurse him from a standing position in order to relieve engorgement of her breasts, mipnei ha-sakana. That's how Rashi learns in Shabbos. And here Rashi says either the sakana for her, mommy, or for child. Okay, that's a problem because we said he's considered to be a mace. Anyway, so it must be, says the Gemara, yeah, but we're talking about over here where we know that he was already gomru simanav. Tanya, we see in our Braita, Ezeo ben Shmona Kosholo Kololo Chadashav. If he wasn't 8 months it wasn't 9 months in the womb, then that's enough. Rebbe says, no, that's not true. You could check it out. Sima Nimo Chichimalav. You can see whether there is a full development or not. How? By looking at his hair and fingernails. If you see complete presence of fully formed hair and fingernails, then you know that he's beyond 8 months. He must have actually conception took place earlier than you thought, or we'll see the other possibility in a moment. So you see from here, time at a low gamru. But if they were gamru, then we assume that he was actually a complete gestation of a ben sheva, and he's been hanging around a bit too long. So he's actually a overdeveloped in a sense. He's been staying there too long. So now the question is, when we had an action, this can be an interesting case in paternity suits and child support suits, right? Because there was a case that came to Rav HaTosva of a woman whose husband went overseas on a business trip, and she had a baby 12 months after he left. Uh-oh. So Rav HaTosva said, no, you could still assume that the child is not a mamzer. So how did he paskin that? Was it only going aliba to Rebbe, who says that you can actually consider the possibility that a fully developed fetus will stick around Because, I mean, he said the 7 month could have ended up coming out only in the 8th month. So maybe the 9th month could have ended up coming out in the 12th month. So is that who you're prosecuting like? Says the Gemara, no. I was prosecuting like a combination of Rebbe Shita and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. And I think that that gives me strong basis for prosecuting like a rabbi. Because given the Ika Reb Shimon ben Gamliel to Omer Mishtayim, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel also says, as I'll show you, that we have to consider that possibility. So therefore, Rebbe was Rav HaTosfa was passing like two, like Rebbe and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Where do I see this? Because the Tanya Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Kol Shishah Shoshim Yom Biadam, Ba'adam Eino Nefa. Once a child survives for 30 days, so then we understand that he was a fully formed fetus. And therefore, we can assume that he was there from the beginning. Anyway, getting back to the Braita. So, Tana Rabbana, what defines, we were talking about all these simonim. So we said, remember, he has to be a saris. Kol shuhu, what defines now, suris chama? Kol shu ben esrim, he reaches the age of 20 without ever bringing pubic hairs. In that case, but this is only, as we said before, there needed to also be simonim. As we'll see, even if after the age of 20 he does bring pubic hairs, those aren't pubic hairs, they're just hairs in the pubes, which is not the same thing. And at that point, even so, he's considered to be a saris. Now, this is only if he has the simanim. So what are these simanim? So first of all, he does not have a beard. Kosha ein lo zakat. So he doesn't shave. And saro lakui. He's got very thin hair. Where he does have it on his head. And he has very soft skin, like a female. So Bisaro Machalik, instead of being typical male, thicker, hairy skin, he has a female skin. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Mishum Reb Yehuda ben Yair. There's more than that. There's also, when he urinates, there is no foaming. Kol she'ein meimav ma'alin retichot. Others say, as we saw before, he urinates without making any kind of art in the urination. Others say you have to check his semen. If his semen is watery, then that's a sign that it isn't really useful semen. V'yesh omrim, kol she'ein meimei raglav machmitzim, he urinates and the urine doesn't turn into ammonia rapidly. Acherim omrim, kosher ocheitz b'yemot ha'gishamim, he takes a shower in the middle of the winter, and ein b'saro ma'alehevo, you don't see any heated water, so steam coming off of his body. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, also he has a female voice. Kol shekolo lakui, he has a very thin voice. Ve'eno nikar bein ish li'isha, you can't tell whether you're talking to a male or a female. What is the signs that we spoke about of an island is? So we said, well, first of all, obviously, she's 20 years old. She has not produced pubic hairs. And this is true even if she does have pubic hairs later. And then she's an islandess, assuming that she also brought simanim. Now, what are the simanim? So first of all, she doesn't have any breasts. She looks basically like a male chest. Zakosha Ela Dadim. Furthermore, she has experiences pain when she has intercourse. So she's not, does not have a typically developed vagina or vaginal secretions to make intercourse easy for her. Furthermore, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, kol she'ein la shipulei me'ayim kinashim, she doesn't have that structure, which is called kaf in Hebrew, of a raised area above the vaginal area, like women have. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar adds, her voice is a thick, male-like voice. Ve'ena nikeret bein isha le'ish. Itmar, these simanim, are they all simanim or any one of these are simanim? So Rav Huna says, you cannot define a saris unless you have all of these simanim. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even one. That the truth is that where, if a person has some hair in the beard, but that's not a zakan, as Tosfos points out. A zakan is a full zakan, but over here, there are hairs in his beard, but hairs in a beard, points out Tosfos from here, are not able to be simonim. They're not pubic hairs. They are beard hairs. And therefore, as you have that stage of teenagers who have a little bit of hair here and a little bit of hair there, and they look like they've got thorns in their beard, that's not a beard, and it's also not puberty. So if he does, however, have such hairs, so then in order to make him a saris for sure, he needs to have all of the simonim we spoke about. But the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Huna was where there were no hairs in the beard. Wait a minute, so can you tell me something? Rabba Bar Avua said to the Talmidim that, do me a favor, next time you take a shower in the mikveh, could you please take a closer look at Reb Nachman, because I would like to give him my daughter to marry, but this kid looks a little weird with his beard. I want to know whether he is actually a male or not fully. So see whether Bisaro Malahevel, see whether his skin actually raises steam, which we said that was one of the simonim, because then I'll give him my daughter. So who is he going according to over here? So, I mean, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he said you can see by any simonim that this guy is considered to be a saris. What did he need to see? Bedafka, ein besaro malahevel. Apparently he needed to be like Rav Huna, no? Who said that we need all of these simonim? No. Reb Nachman was one of these guys that had these weird little thorns in his beard, so to speak. So his Rebbe was a little bit nervous. You know, this guy's not very masculine. But once that's true, so then you have to check out over there, or even according to Rabbi Yochanan, you would need to check him out. Now, I have no idea how that could be. We need to check him out. I mean, he certainly didn't take a sperm sample from him to see whether Shikabazaro is Dea or not, right? So what do we mean we check him out? Just one of these simonim is not checking him out. Unless you want to say that maybe he didn't paskin, like the various yeshomrim. Some added this, and some added that, and some added this. So maybe that was the checking out that was necessary. I don't know. Mefarshim don't explain it. But anyway, let's get into the lashon of the Mishnah. So then the Mishnah says, Asaris lo choletz velo meyameh, v'chein ha'aylanit. Now, if you are careful about the lashon, the way that it says that a saris is the same as an aylanit, so you're apparently telling me what kind of saris are we talking about? A saris similar to an aylanit. It's just like an aylanit is not caused by accidents. It's bidei shamayim. Av saris bidei shamayim, which means that this is going as a stam mishnah, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva, who says that bidei Adam, then he has to do chalitza bidei shamayim. He does not. And then the Mishnah continues, asarisha chalatz levimto lo pisala. If he did chalitza, it's not chalitza at all. She can marry a kohen. And then it says, if he sleeps with her, then he does pasul her. Why? Because he is a saris chama, and that is a psuadaka. And therefore, he's not allowed to marry. So if she had relations with him, then she would actually be pasul kahuna. Is that why? No. Yeah, you're right. Something went wrong. Will you please go away? So in this case, the issue is that only because he slept with her. That's what it's indicating. And his sleeping with her is very serious, because over here we're talking about being over an Isser Koris, since there was no Chiyav of Yibam, so it's an Eishes Ach Shelo B'Mokom Mitzvah. So of course he passes from the Kuna, but the Mashmaut is that someone else who was a Saris, but was not the husband, would not passel her. And that is despite the fact he was just a guy, but he was perfectly normal, but he was anyway going to be overrun in Isser Lav. What was that? That he took a Yavama Lashuk. Someone goes ahead, sleeps with her. There's other brothers here. He passeled her for the brothers, we said, if he slept with her. But another guy that was overrun in Isser Lav actually does not make her usher. So apparently, this shows that Rav Amnuna is wrong. Rav Amnuna said that if a Shomeret Yavam is Zinta, she becomes Psula. So she becomes the same as a sotah, basically. She slept with someone else. She should be pasul as a zona for a kohen also. No. Even though it says he slept with her, the truth is anybody who slept with her would have asered her. Hu adin la'acher nami. But since the reisha, the first part of the Mishnah, was talking about all these other things, that he gives her a get, he gives her mamam, and obviously nobody else could do that. That's a joke. So there we needed to talk about him. So he said, if he does this, he goes ahead and gives her mamam, or he gives her a get. And we also talk about, or he sleeps with her, does chalitza, or he sleeps with her. So then the din would be that, okay, but it could be anybody who sleeps with her would have passed her for the kuna. So either tana reisha b'didei, tana nami sefer b'didei. That doesn't mean a darn thing to me. So v'chein ailonit. So then we had in the Mishnah that if the brothers did chalitza with an ailonit, so they don't pass her from a kohen because chalitza with an ailonit is meaningless. Now, in this case, we have the continuation, of course, always leaves out the most salient point. Now, then they say that if they actually slept with this Ilanit, then they would parcel her because, after all, she was an Eshet Achshelo B'Mokom Mitzvah, a disaster. So now she becomes a Zona and she's not allowed to marry a Kohen, right? Says the Gemara, but wait a second. You're telling me the only reason that she becomes Pasul from marrying a Kohen is because they slept with her? Haloba halua, suppose that she never had slept with anybody, that then she would be okay and could go marry a Kohen after her husband died? But then that means that the Mishnah is clearly not like Rabbi Yehuda. Because remember, Aliba to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda said way before we had this that the nature of the Ilanit is ipso facto. Remember, he had this beautiful pasuk that he brought from Hosea, which is that if it says over there, Vachlu velo yizbo, he's nu velo yifrotsu. If he's nu velo yifrotsu, means that any time there is no yifrotsu, there's no reproduction, which by an island is by definition, no reproduction. So in that case, any kind of sexual activity with her would be considered to be zona. We don't paskin like that, of course, but that means that the Mishnah, it can't be going alibad Rabbi Yehuda.